Hello, and welcome to the Over and Back Classic NBA Podcast. I am Jason, and with me as usual is Rich. Hello, Rich.
What is going on?
Not too much, man. We're just, it's been another season, you know. Another NBA Finals is in the books. It was not among the most exciting NBA Finals, unfortunately, but some interesting things happened that we'll get a chance to talk about. Some history was made, or there may have reassessed some of our feelings on the Warriors or on LeBron or on the Cavs. Obviously, you know, the historic that, as we talked about in a previous episode, historic that teams have faced each other four times in a row in the finals. Mm-hmm. And of course, it never happened before. So, yeah, some good stuff there.
Yeah, no, it was. It wasn't the most basketball-y NBA Finals we've seen in recent vintage, and there's been obviously better series and better series between these two teams or whatever, but it's ripe for investigation or whatever we're going to do here of talking about it, because there is a lot of stuff that came about from it. Maybe the basketball itself wasn't the best, maybe it wasn't the most entertaining, maybe you weren't glued to your TV every second, but there's a lot of stuff that now coming out of this we can talk about and sort of discuss and kind of in some ways kind of globalize, or now it's part of history, so let's look at it amongst other teams and other things that we're going to talk about. We're going to throw around a word here where the very people get scared. They shiver when you say this word, but we're going to talk about it. We're going to hit it. We're going to face it dead on. We're going to go for it.
Is it the D word?
It's the D word.
This is the D word. Yeah, not the D word that hopefully people are not thinking about.
Yeah, we're getting racy here. You know, we need a little bit more listenership. So let's get racy here. It's a little X rated. Season's over. Yeah. We're good to go.
We're going blue in the summer. You know, it's right, our new, exactly. It's a new angle. Yes. So,
DeMarcus.
What kind of history?
Oh.
DeMarcus. Yes,
right. DeMarcus Cousins is the missing piece of the Cavaliers. That's where we're going
with,
right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay.
If they just gotten DeMarcus Cousins, it would have
right,
been.
Exactly.
That's what the D is. That's absolutely true. So, what kind of history was made? Well, this is the first time that in any of the major professional sports in North America that two teams met for the championship 4 years in a row. First team that a team was swept in the NBA Finals since 2007. The Cavs were also the losing team in that instance, the first time LeBron went to the Finals. And as we mentioned, the with LeBron in his eighth consecutive NBA Finals appearance, which is a record for any non-Celtic, suffered the second NBA Finals sweep of his career. So, I don't know. Anything else notable in terms of this is the first time this happened in terms of history?
Yeah, I think the big parts of it, the history-wise, is obviously the team is facing each other four times in a row. I think the LeBron thing, as we mentioned, as well. I guess the first team to sweep since 2007 is kind of, interesting. And sweeps happen, obviously, in the World Series all the time and Stanley Cups and all that stuff all the time or whatever. But it seems more infrequent these days. I feel like when I was growing up that it seemed to happen a little bit more, and that might have just been my thoughts or me being a stupid kid or whatever, but it has been a while. And like, we look at the NBA, I mean, it's 2007 and we sort of think, oh, it's the Cavaliers, it was LeBron, da, da, da. That was a long time ago though. LeBron's obviously playing for quite a while, so it has been 11 years since we've had a sweep in the NBA Finals, so it's definitely a rarity right now or in this current NBA structure. But yeah, I think just teams facing each other multiple times in a row, and then the LeBron thing, which we'll talk about here in a little bit, is super significant, going to the finals that many times in a row, whether you win or lose them. We'll discuss that, of course, at length a little bit, but an accomplishment nonetheless, just to get there as many times as he got there. I mean, it's so interesting to see that just this one player can sort of help teams get there. And we had some, some pushback, and I saw some pushback both on our Facebook page and our Twitter account, because there were times where we would say, oh, LeBron's gone to 8 straight finals, and people were like, well, what about the teams he plays for? And it's like, all right, but at the end of the day, we're not, putting down the George Hills of the world or the, James Joneses of the world, but, LeBron is the factor that plays a huge role in whatever team he goes to making the NBA Finals for the last 8 years. I don't think that's that crazy of a hot take, but for some it was.
Yeah, I understand, Richie. People might have strong feelings about, J.R. Smith or Tristan Thompson or, some of the role players along the lines. Maybe Udonis Haslem.
Yeah, Eric Dampier not getting his love for the first Heat team. So, yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, exactly. So, looking at the D word, as we said, the dynasty word, that's the one.
Oh, okay. I get it. That makes a lot more sense than the DeMarcus.
Yes.
Okay. Okay. I get where you were going now with that. Okay.
Right. Yes, exactly. So, I don't know exactly. We've maybe danced around this topic before, and history of, what exactly a dynasty is or isn't. I don't know if, we necessarily have ever clarified our thoughts completely about it. I don't know what you're feeling about a dynasty. For me, it's I think that there's actually a list of NBA dynasties on Wikipedia, which I think is a, you know, reasonable start for that. Some of them I definitely agree with. Some of them I'm not 100% sure about, but that's kind of where I would start with in terms of the dynasty definition.
Yeah, I've always kind of I've sort of wavered on it a little bit. I think when I was growing up a little bit more, and especially living with the Chicago Bulls, obviously in Chicago, to me, dynasty was X amount of titles in a row, championships, rings, that sort of stuff. And as I've grown a little bit, and the team that really made me sort of change my thoughts on it, and I'm curious where you stand on it, is the San Antonio Spurs. And it's the, I don't know how you really give a dynasty for the Spurs, I guess like 1999 to like last year or whatever. Like, I don't, you know what I mean? It's kind of been this ever thing, maybe since when Tim Duncan retired, but even then they were still pretty great even after that. But because they were a team that, to me, no, they weren't winning the titles every single year. No, they weren't, you know, in the finals every single year. They weren't vying for the championship every single year, but they were a playoff contender every year. They were a title contender pretty much every year. Anytime the playoffs started, there was a chance that the Spurs could make it, and they won numerous championships in this sort of time period with the same relative core of players. So I sort of changed from them and said, okay, look, I used to define it as just X amount of consecutive rings, or, you know, four rings in 5 years or whatever, sort of the dominance that we talk about. And there's something to be said for the Spurs and their, I guess, dominance over the course of time, which almost became boring at a point. It almost became, oh, the Spurs again. And it was like, but that's still, to me, I define them as a dynasty. I define pretty much 1999 until, yeah, like I said, I don't know the exact time period that you want to use. Maybe when Duncan retires, that last title win over the Heat, however you want to sort of play it out or whatever. To me, that was a dynasty, even if it wasn't the strict definition of rings or whatever that a lot of people do. But I don't know, where do you sort of stand on how to define a dynasty? Because that team really did change my thoughts on it completely.
Yeah, I'll go on some thoughts on the Spurs in a moment, but I just wanted to give the list of dynasties here, the Wikipedia ones, and see kind of where, and start from there, and then we'll build to that Spurs question, because I think it's interesting. So this has the Minneapolis Lakers from 49 to 54. You should really go back a year because of the NBL title as well to 48, but I think we can all agree they are definitely a dynasty, you know, five titles in 6 years. I think that one's clear. Three in a row, they check all the boxes there. Boston Celtics, obviously, 57 to 69, eight championships, 11 out of 13 years, definitely no question about it. Then we get to the Lakers from 80 to 91, and we'll I think put a pin on those for a minute because I have some thoughts about that. Also, basically within that same time frame, the Celtics from 81 to 87. And then we get to the Bulls from 91 to 98. I think, again, definitely a dynasty. The Spurs from 99 to kind of wherever you want to say that. 2014 was their last title. 2016 was when Duncan retired. You could even kind of go to maybe 2017 when they won, I think, 65 plus games. You know, but so they're obviously a contender for it. Whether what exact time period fits that is, I think, a question. Then we have the Lakers from 2000-2004, three titles in a row. I think pretty comfortably a dynasty. The only question I would ever have would be longevity there, but I think, I don't know, I think three in a row pretty much gets you there no matter what. And then the Warriors of 2015 to now, I we're going to get to that, but I think that they're, you know, pretty much unquestionably a dynasty.
Yeah. So as far as that Spurs question, though, what did you think as far as them? How do you define them? Because it wasn't, you know, a numerous titles in a row or whatever. It was a lot of titles and a lot of success sort of spread out over a long time period.
Right. Yeah. I mean, if you look at like the 07 to the 03 to 07 window where they won three titles in 5 years, like that, I think definitely fits like the typical definition of dynasty of like multiple titles over like a short period of time. Like, I think you win three in 5 years. I don't know. I think that definitely fits the traditional term of dynasty. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I would. Yeah, for sure.
Okay. Yeah. So then looking at like the 99 to 2014 window, that's five titles in 16 years. And that's still impressive, but on its face, I wouldn't consider it like strictly a dynasty, but I think it's like a different phenomenon outside of a dynasty. And you consider the fact that, as you talked about, pretty much every year they were contending for championships, and you know, they were like among the elite teams. I mean, they had all those, you know, 50 plus win seasons and everything. I mean, their, you know, run of 20 years of, you know, excellent seasons is, you know, pretty much unprecedented in sports history. No one's really had a, you know, sustaining, you know, excellent to great, you know, run like they have had during that time, even though obviously, you know, only five championships in 16 years. So, I think it's almost like a, I don't even know if we have a word for it, but I think it's something else outside of a dynasty. But if you look in that, like that 03 to 07, I think that definitely fits the, you know, dynasty. But what they did outside of that, I think, is even more impressive than a traditional dynasty.
Yeah, for sure. No, that's a kind of a good way to put it. And another team, too, that that I know we brought up a little bit there is the Lakers, the 2000 to 2004 Lakers. So recent history. I think these are interesting ones because I think like some of the other ones, like obviously the Celtics in the 50s and 60s, like that's unquestioned. You know, that's good. Of course, the very literal definition of a dynasty, what they did there. But I'm curious about that Lakers team. So that's the Kobe Shaq Lakers, of course. They win their first title in 2000. They go back-to-back in 2001. They go for a three-peat in 2002, and then by 2003, 2004, it kind of all falls apart. They're still in the mix. They're still there. They're still a contending team. But, you know, at that point, then it's over. By that time, Shaq's out. Shaq, Kobe don't get along. All that sort of stuff fills out. You know, all this sort of turmoil that goes on in that time period. But you have 4 years of you know, three titles, really, essentially, or if you want to do 3 and 5 years, however you want to sort of stretch the years, but they get a three-peat in there. I think, would you, in your mind, despite the fact that it only lasted maybe 4 or 5 years tops, does a three-peat, no matter what, count for a dynasty in a sense?
Yeah, I mean, I would think so. I mean, obviously, that fourth finals appearance, you know, even though they lost that last one in 04, I think that helps already. And I think, I think three in a row pretty much has to seal it. I don't think that there's really any other. I can't see them not even being in there. But you know, if you compare, like, I mean, if for some reason the Warriors broke up, you know, this offseason, obviously that's not going to happen. But you know, maybe after another year or two, maybe someone gets unhappy, they demand a trade, and they break up earlier than usual. That would be close to the same window that they've had, you know, right now, 3 and 4 years. So that would be, you know, 5 or 6 years or whatever. So it's not, you know, even though it seems pretty short, especially compared to a lot of the teams that we're talking about here, I think it's long enough that it was sustaining enough, it was dominant enough. I think it definitely fits, but it is a little bit of an oddball in term, you know, compared to the kind of the rest of them.
Yeah, what's actually interesting is today, as we're recording this, is like the 26th anniversary of the last time the NBA and NBC signed off, the final time they signed off. And it's really interesting because that's when they beat the Nets. So the Lakers had just beat the Nets in the NBA Finals. And the talk around the Lakers is so, you know what I mean? Like, we talk about this all the time where it's like, the Warriors are ruining the NBA. Like, now it's inevitable or whatever. Bob Costas starts the broadcast by saying the Lakers win another championship and we have to wonder if it will ever end. It's like, you know what I mean? Like, because at the time it's like, well, shit, this team just won 3 in a row. The Nets were no contest whatsoever for them. They were just sleepwalking. Like, Shaq was literally sleeping during games and still, you know, putting up 25, 30 points or whatever. And Costas has that remark of like, well, people are wondering if this is inevitable, if it's ever going to end, if the Lakers will just continue this dominance forever or whatever. And as we know, you know, looking and peering into the future, by next year they would, you know, have some issues and not make the finals. And then the year after that, they would make the finals with, you know, Malone and Payton, but then the whole thing would explode and they'd be done. And then the dynasty, you know, quote unquote, was over, you know, in another 2 years. So it's just kind of funny how, in some ways we sort of take for granted how long some of these things go on, because like you said, I would consider that Lakers team a dynasty. I will talk about the Warriors here in a sec. They're about the same length right now, but at the time it feels like, oh my God, this has been going on forever. But exactly, like the Lakers, they ended after 2 years, and then it was like, oh, well, that wasn't very long. And like you're saying, we're talking now as if the Warriors are this thing that's like, oh my God, the NBA is ruined, da, 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 and yada yada, whatever. But if it all breaks up after next year, like you said, for whatever reason, we don't know. I mean, we didn't know the Lakers were gonna, you know, fall apart when they did. If it all breaks up, I think like time will look back at the Warriors and go like, yeah, they were great for like 3 or 4 years, but man, they didn't really have the longevity or whatever, which is nuts because when you're living in it, it feels like such a grind and such a inevitability is the word a lot of people bring up, but that's sort of what it feels like in the moment. But yeah, if it all ends in another year, we're gonna look back and go, oh geez, they really didn't have that long of a run.
Right. Yeah, I mean, obviously things look very different in hindsight. It's obviously that almost doesn't need to be said, but there is very much a difference, and you're right. I mean, it really hasn't been that long for the Warriors compared to some of the other great teams of all times. And this, I think, segues into interesting thoughts about the 80s Lakers and 80s Celtics, because, you know, those are two teams that definitely have, you know, fit the definition of dynasty in a certain way. But the fact that they both were competing with each other, you know, roughly the same time, that, I think, changes the question. So if you just look at, like, for the Lakers for the 85 to 88 period, that's three titles in 4 years, which I, again, fits our, you know, the qualifications we've had, that definitely fits. If you expand that to 80 and 88, that's five titles and seven finals in 9 years, which I think also fits comfortably. But then you have to think about the 80 Celtics. They won in 81, 84, 86. So they won three in 6 years. But can we have two dynasties that overlap? You know, do we defer to the Lakers because they obviously accomplished more overall in the decade, but they only won two in that same 81 to 86 period? But were they, you know, significant enough in that small window that, you know, the 80s Celtics can't be a dynasty because they competed too much with the Lakers? It's an interesting question to me.
Yeah, that is, I had thought of that, the concurrent dynasties. If it, you know, by its very nature, you can't be a dynasty if there's another dynasty. I don't know. I think the way that the NBA sort of is structured, and this is how we've always kind of done this show as well, is I think we are not a rings show. You know, I'm sure there are plenty of NBA podcasts you can listen to that define success simply by rings and how many rings you win or whatever. You and I, and at least I don't want to speak for you, but I've always sort of been of the mindset that getting to the conference finals to me is one of the biggest. I mean, that's a huge accomplishment to get to the conference final, and to make it to the NBA finals too is just as much of an accomplishment. And then what happens in the NBA finals, that is what it is. I mean, you can't control. You know, sometimes you just face a great team, or you just got the wrong matchup, or there's an injury or whatever. We, of course, in the 80s between the Lakers and Celtics, we know numerous times where that sort of stuff came up. But to me, there can be two dynasties if they are like the Lakers and the Celtics, different conferences, but they were dominant in their conferences. They were, no matter what year it was, no matter who won the championship at the end of the day, and there was some fluke years and some other teams kind of emerged. But for the most part, those two teams felt like they controlled their conferences, and they would make it to the conference finals and make it to the NBA finals almost every single year or whatever. And to me, that then allows them to sort of be those, you know, dynasties at the same time, because I think, you know, if you just define it by who wins the rings, then you sort of, I don't know. To me, I don't necessarily love that.
Right, I agree. But then if you look at the Celtics, you look also at what the Sixers were doing at roughly the same time, where they, you know, made three finals during basically that same window from 80 to 86. You know, they made the three in 80, 82, and 83. So they were almost an equal team for most of that period, or even better team for a lot of that period than the Celtics. But we don't consider them a dynasty, and they didn't win the ring, so they only won the one. So, yeah, I don't know. I kind of feel like the Lakers are comfortably in the 80s Celtics. I'm not sure they were quite dominant enough. Like I could be persuaded, but I think that maybe they're not quite. They don't quite fit the dynasty definition for me, like the 80s Lakers, you know, clearly do, especially that 85 to 88 period.
Yeah, no, that's fair. Actually, it's not fair. We're going to argue. No, you're wrong, Jason.
Yes. No.
Your opinion is shit. You're wrong.
Yes. Yes. Very bad. So now this leads to another question, and you alluded to it a little bit already. Like, is LeBron James himself a dynasty? Do we need to rethink our definition of that term to include LeBron James? Because, you know, his teams, the Heat and the Cavs, they went to 8 straight finals. They won 3 titles in 8 years. You know, what if that had just been for one franchise? Would we consider that a dynasty? I mean, it actually would be 3 championships, I guess, in 6 years, which would be the same as the Celtics. Now, we would run into the same issue where some of that's overlapping with the beginning of the Warriors dynasty. So, you know, can we really consider that to be the case? But I don't know. There's definitely certainly a case in there. And there's a second issue of just like the success rate, because obviously, you know, LeBron's kind of in the middle between the 60s Celtics, who, of course, you know, won 8 championships in a row, and the Baylor West Lakers, who, you know, lost many of those championships to the Celtics. And, you know, certainly despite making all those finals, would not be considered a dynasty because they won only one championship late in West's career. So we don't really have a parallel of an elite player having that kind of streak of success for two franchises outside. You know, you could kind of throw Julius Erving in there, because from 74 to 83 in the ABA and then the NBA, he did win 3 titles and he made 6 finals in 10 years. That's the closest parallel that I can think of to that. But, you know, I don't know. Do you think that if LeBron were, I guess the first question is, if he were one franchise, would we consider what his teams accomplished a dynasty?
Yeah, I think unquestionably you would. I mean, like I said, you know, going to 8 straight finals, whether you win, you know, only a handful of them, and it's funny that, like, LeBron, you know, he's won 3, and it's just like, ah, a handful, yeah, whatever. But, I mean, I guess when you go to 8, the expectations are pretty high, and when you're in the mix as, like, you know, the greatest of all time, the expectations are a little high. But, no, unquestionably, I think if it were all for one team, he absolutely would, or they would be considered a dynasty. Whatever team it was, X team, would unquestionably, yeah, be a dynasty.
Okay. So do you think we can just call LeBron a dynasty? Like, do we think we should redefine that term?
Yeah, I mean, like, people are going to be upset because it's like one player.
The Heat and Cavs, the Heat / Cavs should be a dynasty. You know, I mean, that's
kind of it is, because, I mean, he goes whatever team he has gone to for the last almost decade, that team goes to the NBA Finals. And that's, I don't know, that's something to be, you know, celebrating, and that's an accomplishment all the same. So, yeah, I guess he is, but I know, yeah, it makes some people uneasy, and it's kind of weird to define, but, yeah, I mean, he kind of has to be, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's a really interesting question. I think that it's something that we're thinking about, and, I would agree that they would definitely be considered that in that window. So, another thing this finals has done is it has moved LeBron James up to the most finals lost list. Jerry West is number one at 8 finals out of 9 played. Elgin Baylor, 7 finals lost out of 7 played. Never won the finals, unfortunately. And LeBron now, 6 finals lost out of 9 played. So he does have the 3, which is pretty good, but obviously has the 6 losses, which a lot of people hold against him, which, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I'm not a count the rings guy, obviously, either. But I do think that it has to say something about you, how you perform and how your teams perform on the biggest stage. There's a lot of context to consider. There's a lot to be thinking about. I don't think that necessarily, you know, Jordan is better than LeBron solely because Jordan was 6-0 in the finals and LeBron is 3-6 in the finals. I mean, I don't reduce it to that, but I do think that LeBron, the finals is the biggest stage you can have. It's the biggest pressure you can have. And honestly, I think LeBron, you know, for the most part, he's had his hiccups, obviously, particularly 2011. But I think he's obviously stood, you know, he stood tall and played really, really excellently through, you know, most of those times, even in those losses.
Yeah, I think the way that I've kind of always defined it, and you kind of said it pretty similar, is I don't think it says everything, you know, your win-loss record in the finals, but I think it says something. Does that make sense? Where it's like, you know, I don't want to say, oh, well, who cares? You know, it's not a big deal or whatever. And I also don't want to say, well, no, it absolutely matters. It's the only thing that matters because, you know, Jordan's 6-6 and LeBron's, you know, 6-8. You know, like, yeah, there's definitely something to be said, though. I mean, it is certainly unique, and it has this, for whatever reason, this past finals, even though I don't think anybody, I don't know that nobody really came to the NBA Finals thinking that LeBron and the Cavs were going to win or whatever, but it was a time, and now this is a kind of a period for us to reflect on it and go, okay, well, that's quite a lot. He's played in 9 finals. He's, you know, lost 6 of them. Really, effectively, the one, the 2007, I feel kind of crappy about. Like, that one I don't almost want to, like, add in, because that'd be like if Michael Jordan, like, lucked his way into, like, the 88 finals or whatever, and whatever, like, that Bulls team would have had, like, no chance or whatever, you know, like, the 89 finals or whatever. Like, that Bulls team would have had no chance, and they would have absolutely lost or whatever, but that doesn't make anything that he did after that really matter. It's like one of those ones where they got there a little too early, the Cavs, and so that one's weird. I don't like really counting that one, but basically from 2011 on, I feel like you can count those and really look at those and really reflect on those, because those are him in his prime, him with, you know, pretty what I would consider somewhat loaded teams or whatever, not loaded teams, but good teams, I should say, particularly, you know, Miami was pretty loaded and whatnot, but so now you can kind of reflect on those, and yeah, like you said, I don't know. I don't know what to make of it at this point. I'm not quite sure. But it does. It definitely means something. Like, I don't want to just ignore it and just go, oh, well, whatever. You just, you know, you're losing the NBA Finals. Who cares? It doesn't matter. You get there. Because it is important. But I think we are pretty good about not making it everything. It is not the only thing that matters. There's obviously some nuance. But no, I mean, it is a point of discussion. I mean, it's... You know, this is the biggest stage, and if you're one of those guys, like, you would hope that you get a little bit more, and obviously 3 rings is great, but, yeah, if he never makes another NBA Finals, I think that is absolutely going to be considered, you know, some missed opportunities there many times.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. And really, I mean, I think 2011 is the one where, like, you feel like they should have won that one. I mean, the other times that he's lost, like, the teams were pretty undermanned, and, you know, they were, you know, situations where, you know, they were unlikely to win, but I think 2011 is the one where, but, you know, in winning 4 out of 9 instead of 3 out of 9, I don't think that changes necessarily a huge amount of equation for his career, But you know, that's the one that kind of slipped away a little bit. Of course, 2016 is the one where they were huge underdogs and came back and from the 3-1 lead. So that almost kind of makes up for it to a certain extent. But for the record, I would like to name the other people who have lost four or more finals appearances, because it's an interesting list. So Larry Faust, sadly, who, by the way, belongs in the Hall of Fame, is one of the overlooked players who was not in the Hall of Fame.
Is he not in the Hall of Fame? Holy shit.
He's not in the Hall of Fame.
What?
Yeah, I know.
Come on.
I know.
Ridiculous.
It's one of the better guys
really?
Who's not
I
in
just
the
thought
Hall
he was
of
in.
Fame.
What
but,
the hell? No, really?
Made five.
He's not.
Yeah.
Wow, good lord.
I know. Yeah.
What?
So made
five.
Yeah.
Stupid. Okay. Go ahead.
Richard, you're aghast at this. I know.
I kind of thought he would. I mean, come on. Why not?
Yeah, right. So, yeah, he made five finals and lost five finals. Came very close in a 55 to beating the Nationals, but unfortunately things did not turn out well for him there. And in terms of guys who have lost four finals, we have almost all Lakers. Keith Erickson, Rui LaRusso of the Lakers, Steve Mix, mostly was the Sixers, but 1 year with the Lakers. Max Zaslavsky, I always have trouble with his name, Max Zaslavsky, mostly with the Knicks, Danny Ainge, lost a couple toward the end of his career with the Blazers and Suns. And of course, the two of the Celtics as well. Will Chamberlain, Mel Counts, Magic Johnson, and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. So, of course, Kareem won six rings and Magic won five rings. So they did pretty well there. Brought it up briefly, but the Warriors came very, very close to winning four championships in a row. Only they blew that 3-1 lead, of course, in 2016. And only lost that Game 7 finals by I think, 4 points. So... if you think about, they've already accomplished so much and they obviously have a chance to accomplish a lot more, but if they had won four titles in a row, where would that put them?
I mean, it puts them in a different stratosphere, really. I mean, if you look at the history of the NBA, there are plenty of teams that won three in a row, plenty that obviously go back to back or whatever, but I mean, four in a row just does not happen. And we got to go all the way back. I believe, I don't know if I had this wrong. I don't think I do, but we got to go all the way back to the Celtics dynasty, the Russell Cousy Red. I mean, everybody else, there's teams that make it multiple times in a row and teams and we get three-peats and we get that sort of stuff, but four in a row is like a different stratosphere. It's a completely different universe.
Yeah, the fact that the Celtics did it twice is remarkable. Yeah.
Back to back, yeah. And then took a year off and then won a bet. That goddamn that Celtics dynasty.
Yeah. That's an amazing team. I know it was a very different league. It was a smaller league. You know, there are a lot of caveats to, that. But, I mean, it's just amazing that they were able to do it year after year. And you look at the Warriors this year, and they were definitely, not as strong in the regular season. They came extremely close to losing to Houston in game. They were down 3-2, and they really lost that. Houston lost that game 7 after, having a historically crazy bad three-point shooting game where they easily could have won that series. Mm-hmm. So I mean, we saw it with the Heat, we've seen it with a lot of teams where that fourth year is just such a huge drag, and you slow down and it becomes harder and the motivation isn't there and all that different stuff. So putting the Celtics accomplishments in perspective, and honestly LeBron's 8 finals in a row despite the 3-5 record, I mean to be able to bring it year after year just to make it to the finals is pretty amazing.
Yeah, no, that's definitely, yeah, but four in a row, that's it would have been pretty cool. And like the thing is like, yeah, it's obviously the caveat because they didn't win it and they didn't win the ring, but like they were right there. They were up 3-1. Like it's almost like we should just count it, but obviously we're not going to and we can't. But it's, yeah, when you realize that it was that close to being that four in a row, and really when you look at the other series, like obviously there was competitive series the first the first Warriors Cavs year or whatever, that one, semi-competitive series, but I mean really the Warriors were by all intents and purposes going to win that series. Matthew Dellavedova is your second best player, is probably not a good way to win an NBA finals, but LeBron did all he could. So you have that series where the Warriors pretty much definitively won it when it was all said and done. Then you have the second one, they obviously go up 3-1 and blow that, and then the last two have just been kind of relative cakewalks or whatever. So it's amazing to think that if they had just finished that off, like imagine if at 3-1 they just finish it off, Draymond stops hitting people in the nuts and they just win, and I mean then it's just like, oh my god, like then they're the talk now. I mean we have this like doomsday scenario now about the Warriors. Can you imagine if they just won four straight, like basically sweeps, outside of just like a game or two here and there? Like they'd have been nuts with the people would have said.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that would be a different level. I mean, obviously, it'll be interesting to see if they go in for three-peat next year and whether they get in that club, much less, you know, four in a row. But, yeah, that's just that's almost mind-blowing, the fact that they've been able to, you know, to get to that point. The fact that they came so close to getting to that point is, you know, is pretty mind-blowing. But something we asked on Twitter is whether Kevin Durant and Steph Curry right now are top 25 players in NBA history. Rich, what do you think?
Man, it's pretty tough. There was a really good article. I think it just got released today by Michael Pina on Vice Sports. It's called Steph Curry is in the VIP room of NBA history. And I thought it was a pretty interesting way. And he brings up a bunch of stats that I think kind of put into context a little bit, and then I'll sort of give my answers here. But essentially kind of bullet points of what Steph Curry's done, you know, in his career right now. Mind you, he's like still pretty young. Like Steph Curry probably has a few more years under his belt, but you know, we don't know what happens. Injuries can come up or whatever. But three rings and two MVPs before his 31st birthday. He's made five All-Star teams, five All-NBA teams, two first, two second, and one third. He's led the league in scoring once. True shooting percentage, he's led the league twice, and he's had top 10 usage rate in both those years as well, which is pretty significant. He's led the league in steals twice. He's led the league in three-pointers attempted and made five times. We know that he's obviously going to become the greatest three-point shooter if he's not already. I mean, I think he probably is already the greatest three-point shooter of all time. Offensive real plus minus, he's led the league twice, and since the stat's been invented, he has never finished below third. Three rings in 5 years or fewer as kind of the top player of this team as well. This is kind of a weird one that he brought up as well. Essentially, what Michael brought up is, you know, Curry kind of joins Tim Duncan, you know, Shaquille O'Neal, Magic Johnson, Michael Jordan, Bill Russell, and George Mikan on a list of like guys that have won three rings in 5 years as like the man of their team or whatever, which is pretty interesting. And he looked also at there's been 29 players that have scored at least 11,000 points during their age 24 to 29 seasons. And Steph Curry ranks second in true shooting, first in three-point percentage, first in free throw percentage, first in effective field goal percentage, and he's also 10th in two-point percentage. And he's ahead of two-point percentage. He's ahead of Wilt Chamberlain, Moses Malone, Dirk, Jerry West, Kobe, Bird, Wade, and several other Hall of Famers in that as well. So we're looking at just a guy rank-wise. Like, if he retired tomorrow, we look at these ranks and whatnot. I mean, he's up there, and it seems kind of weird given, like, his body frame and his body structure and the way his game is molded, but top 25, my brain has a tough time, like, kind of coming up with exactly who my, you know, quote-unquote top 25 would be, but, I mean, he's got to be in the mix, right?
Oh, yeah, I mean, he's definitely in the mix. I mean, I think there's a good chance that he and Durant are already been on there. Yeah, like I said, I haven't totally, like, made my absolute list of top 25, but I think he's, you know, he's along there. The interesting thing there is the three rings and five or fewer years as the most irreplaceable player on their team. That's an interesting definition for Curry because, you know, would you argue right now that over the last 2 years, Curry has been the best player or Durant has been the best player? And there are a lot of metrics that suggest that Curry actually provides more value to the Warriors than Durant does. I think that, like, I've heard it described, I think Matt Moore kind of put it this way, is that, you know, Durant raises their floor, but Curry raises their ceiling. Like, Curry is the thing that makes them special, but Durant may be the better overall player. I'm not totally sure how to completely parse that because, you know, obviously they're both such fantastic players, and I think they definitely, Durant's been around a little bit longer and has slightly more accolades, although obviously Curry has the two MVPs, so I think of Durant as more definite of top 25, but they're, you know, they're definitely both in that, they're definitely in that box. I mean, we talked about when Durant went to Golden State, of the idea of, like, okay, is he going to put himself in the conversation for, you know, one of the greatest players of all time with this move, you know, with these, you know, things. And I don't think that's going to be happening. I think part of that is because LeBron has maintained, like, he looked like he might be declining a couple years ago, and he's maintained, like, an incredible level, and has just built on his case rather than fading. I think that there is just so much of having to share the credit for what has been going on with this Golden State team that it's kind of impossible for one individual to really stand out as much as, like, you know, greatest of all time kind of guy would do. But I mean, yeah, obviously they're, I think they're both comfortably in this conversation, and both have, you know, these great accolades, as you've outlined, for Curry and Durant. Here are some incredible ones as well.
Yeah, Durant's got just a laundry list. You almost kind of forget as well just how much Durant has accomplished. But at this point right now, he's a 9-time All-Star, 4-time scoring champ, 7-time All-NBA, 1-time MVP, of course, 2-time Finals MVP, you know, racking up another one this year. He won Rookie of the Year. Hall of Fame probability, I thought it was kind of interesting as well. Basketball Reference has their Hall of Fame probability. He was 100%. Curry was 99.6. So, I mean, they're both like immortal locks for the Hall of Fame. But I found it kind of interesting that Durant was 100% while Curry was 99.6. Not quite there yet, but, you know, almost there. But, yeah, Kevin Durant all-time. 31st all-time in value over replacement players. 17th all-time in box plus minus. 10th all-time in win shares per 48. Now, all those can sort of, I guess if he has a bunch of, like, negative seasons, that can kind of go down. But you would sort of assume that, you know, given where Durant's at right now, that he's going to only help those numbers or only enhance those numbers a little bit. But we'll kind of see how things go on. I guess if he has, like, a decade of, you know, negative value, then maybe not. But I that would be pretty surprising if he does that. 37th all-time right now in win shares. 8th right now in PER. And 5th all-time in points per game. I think that's an interesting one as well. We have talked about it before. And when we previewed seasons or whatnot, but I don't think people understand just how, like, all-time great scorer Kevin Durant is and what level he's on in terms of all-time great scorers. 5th all-time right now in points per game. And obviously that's going down a little bit playing with the Warriors and playing, you know, with you know, a few other guys in terms of Clay and Curry who were taking up numbers. But, like, had he stayed on his own, like, we're looking at a guy who could be in contention for the most all-time points per game. But now, even a few years in Golden State, he's still 5th all-time in that, which I think is pretty remarkable.
Yeah, that absolutely is wrong. Well, I was trying to get, like, a gander of where he is on the list right now, because he's just recently crossed 20,000 points, almost at 21,000 points. So, yeah, I mean, he's comfortably going to be probably, you know, top 15 all-time scorer, you know, maybe even in the top 10.
Yeah, Shaq he's 41st right now, yeah. If that's the number you were looking for. He's 41st right now. So,
right.
Yeah, barring, like, anything catastrophic, like, he's going to just vault up that list over the next, you know, half decade or whatever, however long he plays or whatever. The good thing is he's only had a few kind of nagging injuries or whatnot, but you never know. Like you said, it's fleeting. You never know.
He had the foot injury, but he seems to obviously recover from that. So, yeah, I mean, if he has, like, a normal, you know, career, yeah, he's going to be... He's been probably be close again on 30,000 points for his career. You know, I think that's a fairly safe assumption. You know, if he has the kind of longevity that someone his age and his level of stardom would expect. So here, another interesting one for me. If you look at, you know, kind of the second tier stars on both teams, you know, you look at Draymond Green, Klay Thompson, Kevin Love, you know, do we think that they are likely to be Hall of Famers? And this is a really interesting one for me, because I would actually probably, the Basketball Reference has, of course, their Hall of Fame indicator, but I would actually think that is sort of different from what they say.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you as well. So just to kind of give an idea of the Basketball Reference, you know, Hall of Fame probability for these three guys. For Kevin Love, they have him at 67.6. So they have him pretty likely to make the Hall of Fame. They have Klay Thompson at 24.7, and then they have Draymond Green at 27.3. So now, where do you differ on that? Because I'm curious if we differ in the same ways.
Yeah, I would say, I would think that Draymond and Klay would be higher up on this list. I think Love would be, like, I would think of Love as more like a 50% kind of guy, and I would think of Draymond as more in the, like, 75-80%, and Klay in more like the 60-70% kind of range. That would be
kind
of my thought.
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm at as well. Particularly a Draymond Green type. I think Klay Thompson obviously should be in that mix there, but I feel like when you know, in whatever it is, when a decade, a few decades or whatever, when history looks back at a Draymond Green type, I think he's a guy that's going to be viewed a little bit more positively to history, because he was a guy that could do a bunch of different things, and he was kind of the Swiss Army knife for the team or whatever. So I could see that being something that really propels him to a Hall of Fame mix, where, you know, really, and I'm not going to make that direct argument or whatever, but there is obviously an argument to be made that once they sort of started to give him more of a role, when Steve Kerr comes in and replaces Mark Jackson and goes, well, no, Draymond, let's have you play and not David Lee. Like, why are we playing David Lee when there's you? They basically got to another stratosphere, and that's not 100% because of Draymond Green, but obviously he is a big factor in that, of them sort of changing around, them becoming that identity, them being able to switch every single pick and roll, them being able to have five guys that can dribble and rebound and shoot and do all that sort of stuff. So I love the idea of Draymond in history, in 15 years or whatever, us thinking a little bit more highly of him. Klay Thompson, I think, obviously will, because he's going to go down as one of the greatest shooters of all time, but I could see him being a little bit, I don't know, maybe hamstrung or kind of pigeonholed into like, yeah, he was a really good shooter, but like Curry and Durant and Dre, they were like the guys that really made it happen. I don't know. We'll see how that happens with Clay. And then for me, Kevin Love, I feel like in history, I don't know. I don't know exactly how it's going to go, but for me, I think Kevin Love is going to be looked at as historically a guy that, you know, put up gaudy numbers in Minnesota but didn't win anything. Then he went to Cleveland, and, you know, they obviously won the one thing, but he was, you know, a real secondary piece, and his longevity just wasn't quite there or whatever. I don't know if that's what it's going to be for Love, but I kind of feel like that's the sort of the narrative that we're building up right now, and I don't know if that's going to change all that much in the next few years. I think, especially with him seemingly slowing down a little bit, you still have your little spurts here and there, but I don't know. It all depends how people sort of respond to the Minnesota years, because the Minnesota years are gaudy offensive numbers. They look great, everything's there, but there wasn't success, so I don't know if people then kind of look at down upon that or frown upon that era, and then look at when he was in Cleveland that they had success, but he was not really a vital part of a lot of that success.
Right. Yeah. Love's interesting because he seems like kind of, I don't know, the best parallel I can think of is like a Bob McAdoo, where like he obviously didn't have the highs of McAdoo. I mean, obviously McAdoo was like first or second in MVP for like three straight years, but he didn't have the lows either. He didn't like fall off, you know, that tremendously like McAdoo did. And then McAdoo kind of found the second career as more of a role player on the Lakers. Now, Love is like, you know, the second or third most important player for the Cavs during this 4-year stretch. I mean, kind of behind Kyrie, but obviously Kyrie wasn't there last year. So, I think he's obviously probable Hall of Famer, and I think like obviously he'll, you know, continue to have his career. He's in his late 20s, so he still has a few years of productive play. You know, we'll see what stage he goes into his career next. If, you know, LeBron leaves Cleveland, where, you know, and if where he goes and all that sort of thing. But I mean, I don't know. It's interesting because it helps him in a way that it doesn't help Clay, particularly where. Like, we've seen what Love was like on his own team, and, you know, he was an incredibly, you know, effective offensive player on that team, but that team was, you know, not a very good team. Whereas Clay, like, I mean, it's always possible, of course, he could end up somewhere else later and then kind of showing off, like, what he could do as kind of the number one star versus, you know, number three or four star, you know, choice. I mean, he's, on one hand, he's awesome in his role. On another hand, I feel like he's a guy who potentially could, like, who could show more in like a different system. Like, I think we talked about before, like what it would have happened to Kevin McHale had he been drafted by, like, say, the Bullets instead of the Celtics. If he had been like the man in Washington versus, you know, number two, number three in Boston his entire time, like, would he have even like shown, you know, been more of a superstar, been like an MVP candidate versus, like, you know, obviously still having an excellent career, a Hall of Famer, top 50 player, all that good stuff. But like, obviously that context is really interesting because we see kind of both of it for Love, the fitting in and being the star, where you don't really have that for, you know, for Clay. And I don't think Draymond's quite that kind of player. You know, I think he's a perfect, awesome role player, and him trying to be like a star, I don't think would work, even though he does things at a star level as a role player, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, definitely. Yeah, and that's where it's the Love thing. I don't know. It's a really interesting thing to try to guess what we're going to do in 15 years. And I sort of there guess, you know, that a lot of people are going to like Draymond more than they're like, I don't know. Yeah, it's really, I don't know. Yeah, and obviously we don't know what's in the future. I mean, Kevin Love might go to another team and all of a sudden that team becomes really good and he's ready to be the man again. And that team makes, you know, a few playoff runs or whatever. And that sort of changes the entire trajectory of his career, the narrative around his career. Maybe Draymond leaves and is absolutely, you know, he's a Lance Stevenson or whatever, you know, who knows? It's impossible to know, so it's all just kind of trying to guess into the future and see where things go. But I would not be shocked if all three of them make it at some point. You know, it is the Basketball Hall of Fame, for God's sakes. You know, other than Larry Faust, yeah. I mean, pretty much everyone else gets in. So
right, yeah, Larry Faust, 94%, by the way, of the.
That's what I mean. Why is he not in there? That's ridiculous.
Yeah, come on. I know. Yeah, I honestly don't know. The Hall of Fame is a little weird because they don't. You know, Sigma's not in. I mean, we've been on this right before, but I'll briefly.
Let's call Curtis. Hold on a minute. Let's get Curtis on the line.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Right. So yeah, Sidney Moncrief's not. If you, basically, like, everyone gets in unless you're a Buck.
If you've ever played for the Bucks,
yeah. If you're a Buck or if you're Larry Faust, you don't get to get in. Yeah. Everyone else, you know, pretty much. Yeah. All right.
So Vin Baker, don't wait by your phone. I don't know if it's coming. So.
Yeah, I he's got the Starbucks franchises. Right. He's too busy for the whole thing anyway. So are NBA fans? Are they right to be mad at Kevin Durant? Was his decision lame? You know, is it bad for NBA competition? You know, there's this talk. I feel like this talk has even escalated as the Warriors have continued this success. I think people are more mad at Durant today than they were when he first made that choice, where when it came to LeBron, like, it, obviously that first year was really, really intense and really angry, and then it kind of calmed down a little bit after that. And and I don't know if that has to do with the fact that the Warriors have not failed with Durant, whereas the Heat, you know, failed that right. first year, mm-hmm. and whether that was like a release valve. But I don't know. It's What do you think about all this?
Yeah, I think absolutely. You know, your question about the LeBron thing, I think them losing right away helped it a lot, because it was like, oh, they're not dominant, or oh, they didn't ruin the NBA, and then, like, you know, they wouldn't win the next 2 years or whatever. But I think people then sort of adjusted a little bit because of that. So I think that might have been a blessing in disguise a little bit, as losing that first year, whereas obviously the Warriors have not. Here's where I'm kind of at with this is. At one time, I love dominant teams in the NBA. I love the idea that there are, you know, villains or whatever. That there's a team that everybody wants to beat or whatever. I had no issue with LeBron going to Miami. I mean, maybe like in that exact moment because I wanted him to go to the Bulls or whatever, I cared. But then briefly, like, you know, immediately after, I didn't care all that much. But I found it kind of fun to root against them. You know what I mean? I kind of liked that they were the villain. I wanted them to be more of like the heels of the NBA. And I thought that would have been cool if they did that. So I like that. I like dominant teams. I like, you know, dynasties, all that stuff, sort of fine. But at the same time, and I don't know if I'm allowed to do this, I do think that the Durant thing was kind of lame, just because it was, I don't know, and I don't begrudge him for doing what he did. It was absolutely the right idea, and we've talked about it at length too, is, you know, it's not easy to just go to a team and you know, the expectations are now tremendous that you're gonna have to go out there all the time and you're gonna have to win, because if they lose, it's gonna be such a negative on you. But at the end of the day, when he made the decision, and even today, I still kind of think it was sort of lame, because the Warriors were already a really good team, and I love seeing other people try to compete with those great teams. I love the great team being established, being what they are, and now seeing how other people are going to adjust. Like what the Rockets did, you know, bringing in Chris Paul. That was awesome to me. I love the idea. And I don't care if Paul George goes to the Rockets or LeBron goes to the Rockets. I'm on board with that. All right, cool. Let's have another team try to go at the, you know, the dominant team of the era. Durant's thing, I should say. Even at the time, and still, it just felt kind of lame, because it was like, oh man, you gave them like a really good push as Oklahoma City, and then you just bounced, and then you just joined them. To me, I don't know. It's and that's not me saying that I invalidate Kevin Durant. We've had jokes about that all the time. But I do. Lame is a good word. I just do think it's kind of lame. I just think it took a little bit of steam out of the NBA. And I really would have liked to see Kevin Durant go to another team and try to face off against these Warriors. Or I couldn't do it with Westbrook. Well, I'm going to try it with this guy or whatever. Because I don't know. I just don't love the idea of him going there. When the team's already pretty dominant and the team's already had won a title and were, you know, in the mix for another title. So it to me was a little lame, but I understand it and I don't begrudge him. Am I allowed to do that?
I think okay. So. Yeah, I think nuance is allowed in the show, I believe. I believe we've allowed it. It's in the, well, if you check the rule book, but I think we're okay with that.
The commandments. Yeah,
yeah. No, I get what you're saying. I don't, like, it's not lame to me. I don't know. I think there's a lot of personal stuff, obviously, that goes into decision like that, and we don't know these people these guys as people. So there's a lot more going on. You know, we're not here to regulate anybody's feelings. You know, for me, I think, like, as you alluded to and we've talked about before, you know, the Warriors have embraced this challenge of history, of comparing themselves to all these different dynasties, and to be like, okay, we have this loaded team and we're just going to try to dominate this league and win as many of these championships as can and be considered the greatest of all time. And obviously, you know, adding Durant to that mix puts them in a level where, you know, they're hoping, and I think probably we'll get to the point where they're in the conversation with the greatest dynasties of all time. You know, those 60s Celtics and those 90s Bulls, and, you know, and the 50s Lakers. I mean, those are the ones who have, you know, what dominated their leagues the most during those times. And I think that they have a chance to get there. Now, you know, obviously Houston put up a really tough fight. You know, we'll see what kind of happens in the offseason with LeBron picks another destination and loads up, or maybe the Cavs pull out something to load up or whatever. You know, I don't think it's, you know, fait accompli that the Warriors are going to necessarily, you know, keep winning all the time. But I mean, I think they're going to keep competing for, you know, quite a bit. They're still, you know, they're obviously getting older, and this year they definitely showed some signs during the regular season of slowing down. But, you know, they're still, you know, those guys are, you know, around 30 or so. They probably have, you know, a few more years left at being a championship contender. So I don't know. I think it's complicated. I think it throws down this gauntlet for other teams to try to, like, you know, find this, you know, to stack up and to try to, you know, meet this challenge. I do think that the fact that the idea that Durant's move to the Warriors is unprecedented, I think is just really not true. it is different, and we'll get to that. But I do think, like, you know, Moses Malone and Will Chamberlain both were incumbent MVPs, and they joined teams who had just made the finals. Now, these happened via trade, but Will requested the trade to the Lakers, leaving a team that was a title contender that had won the championship in 67. In fact, had been one of the greatest team in NBA history up to that point, and went to the Lakers, joining, you know, Elgin Baylor and Jerry West. And Moses Malone signed as a restricted free agent with the Sixers, who had made the finals in 82. Eventually, a sign and trade was worked out. There was not unrestricted free agency yet until 88, I believe. So, you know, and then that, he left a team that had made the finals the year before in 81, although they were a dark horse that year.
Right.
And the Sixers, the Rockets at that point were not title contenders. So it wasn't quite the same thing. But they were, you know, they could have reloaded with Moses and, you know, been in the mix. It wasn't like out of the realm of possibility. So, you know, he wasn't leaving a loser. He was leaving, you know, a team that, you know, was kind of more middling, but it had some success and, you know, maybe could have gotten there again. Not that far off from what the Thunder, honestly, you know, had been. So, I don't know. I mean, yes, it is true that KD to the Warriors, never a player that great has joined a team that great, but it's not, like, out of bounds with prior history. Like, I wish, you know, like, it's, you know, yeah, it's an extreme version of something, but it's something that's happened before. It's rare, obviously, because it just doesn't, there aren't that many opportunities for a player that great to join a team that great, you know, in terms of already established greats, as opposed to, like, you know, Magic Johnson being drafted by the Lakers. Something
yeah,
like that.
Yeah. Oh, and one thing as well, not to interrupt, but one thing I've always kind of been a little, I've always kind of fought back on this, because people sort of assume, or people kind of construct the Warriors as this, like, team that just went out there, like, they are not a team that, they are not the Yankees of basketball that went out there and just acquired the best players all at the same time using, like, tricks all they did is essentially draft really well, get super lucky on Draymond Green being, you know, what he was, where they drafted him, got super lucky that Steph Curry had injuries at the time when his contract came up and were able to sign him to a decent deal, and then, you know, hit on Klay Thompson, and then have really kind of hit on a bunch of role players around there. Andre Iguodala coming at the right time and being a guy. So that's always the one thing that I was, and shit, they had a lot of this team together with Mark Jackson. They weren't doing anything, and then they got Steve Kerr, and that was another. So, like, I always kind of fight back on this, because there are teams, you know, we look at, there was, you know, when for a while there, and even in the 80s, it was still going on, where the Celtics were just smarter than every other team and just, like, conning everybody else and, like, getting first round picks out of people, and then just, you know, treating people like absolute fools or whatever, because they were playing a different game than everyone else. The Warriors didn't necessarily do that. They didn't do any, all they did was, like, draft pretty well, get really lucky that contracts kind of timed up, and then the Durant thing was just the biggest stroke of luck, because the, you know, the CBA and the salary cap, the way it was structured, they decided to flatten it out, or, like, so there was just, like, little things that sort of happened, and Durant came free at that time and said, all right, shit, well, I have an opportunity to do this, so I'm gonna go do this. And it's the team that just so happened to have this because of some different things that they did and different ways they constructed, but at no means were they, like, a team built to do this. You know it wasn't, you know, 5 years ago, it wasn't, oh, okay, let's, you know, we're going to do this, this, and this, and then we're going to become a dynasty or whatever. No, they just drafted Steph Curry, and he was with Monta Ellis, and Monta was, you know, rolled his eyes and said, oh, this isn't going to work. No way I'm playing with this guy. And there was a lot of things that had to happen along the way. The Andrew Bogut trade for Monta Ellis is a huge thing. David Lee, acquiring David Lee as a free agent was a big deal to kind of transform that franchise and that dynasty. So there's a lot of little things that sort of led to this, but I think it's kind of weird that people sort of assume that it was this thing that was just, like, as you said, fait accompli, like, oh, well, the Warriors have been this dynasty, and they didn't do anything different than everybody else. They just were smarter about some things and had a lot of luck on their side to get to this point.
Yeah, honestly, if you're talking kind of about the Yankees, the Heatles are kind of a better example of that, because they were able to, you know, they were able to maneuver the, of course, they, you know, salary cap means that the team can't spend more, you know, than a certain amount, but, you know, they were able to kind of manipulate things to get the three stars to kind of come at the same time. I mean, they're really the one that, you know, and I don't really buy that concept, but they're really more the bought, not built.
Yeah, oh, exactly. Those guys got together and said, okay, here's the amount that our contracts are going to be so that we can all come to this team, you know what I mean? Like,
well, which is fine, but yeah, that, if you're going to have that criticism, that really doesn't necessarily apply to the Warriors.
No, not at all. Yeah. I mean, yeah, it was a lot of happenstance that got them to this point, but, it, like, we have to give credit for them for drafting well, and it's obviously needs to be said too. The supporting cast has been incredible as well. They've done an incredible job of Leandro Barbosa's of the world. Different guys. Zaza Pachulia played a role last year. Now this year didn't play a role. You know, getting Jordan Bell this year in the draft because the Bulls are lazy and cheap. There's like little things here and there that they sort of pounce on and they do. And we take for granted because we've seen, we talked about LeBron. LeBron's a guy who I think one of the biggest issues, no matter where he's been, has been that, you know, that the eighth guy on the bench, those supporting cast guys, so hard. You can put all the good guys in the team and you can have, you know, four or five real good guys, but they always seem to struggle with those other bench guys. And when someone gets hurt, it's like that next guy up is not ever, you know, a decent dude. Whereas the Warriors in these finals alone went with Kevon Looney for one game, and then Kevon Looney went away and you barely saw him. And then Iguodala comes back and he's ready to go. And then you got Nick Young that's contributing, you got Jordan Bell that's contributing. Like, so they've been always good about that over the last, you know, 4 or 5 years of always having those guys ready to go. And we forget like a Leandro Barbosa type. I mean, there's been numerous guys as well that have played perfect roles. Even in Andrew Bogut the first year played a pretty decent role for that team. So they've done a good, you know, it's not, yeah, I hate the idea that they've sort of conned their way into this or they bought their way into this. They haven't. They've just built it, and it's taken some luck, but it's been one of the best, you know, built things we've ever seen. And like, and the other thing too is the Warriors were fucking terrible for like 30 years. So you know what I mean? Like, it's not like all the Warriors again. It's like, no, if the Lakers were doing this, I could see that. I would probably be like, damn Lakers again. I'm already doing that about the Celtics. Like, I'm already ruining the day that the Celtics are like, you know, in the finals for the third straight year or something like that after, you know, just conning the Nets or whatever. But like, the Warriors were terrible for 30 years. Like, you know, let them have some fun for a little while.
Indeed.
Chris Cohen, so, the Cohen era. At this day and suck. Like, you can relive what it used to be to be a fan of the Warriors. Like, they deserve this. Trust me.
So, perhaps, you know, I think something that maybe people are even more sick of than the Warriors was the idea of the Warriors versus an undermanned Cavs team, despite having LeBron, you know, for the most part, having a team that, you know, obviously what they did, they some luck involved in 2016 and really, you know, not having a great chance at those other years, despite, you know, competing pretty hard in 2015. What if we decided we would see the playoffs 1 through 16 and not bother with, you know, East and West, but to actually do that? You know, that would maybe give us a chance to have Warriors and Rockets in the finals, which I think would have given us a better taste than the, you know, what we got out of, you know, Warriors and Cavs in the finals. How do you feel about that?
I'm okay with it. My one thing that I'm always kind of a little hesitant about that is because these things kind of go in cycles and there's ebb and flows. The problem though is like over the last 15 years, they really haven't gotten a cycle. We've all kind of waited for, okay, well, the East is going to have its time when it comes back, and it just has never really happened. It doesn't seem like it's going to happen anytime soon. So it might be time to do the 1 through 16, and I have no problem with that. It's fine with me. I'm not, you know, hardened to the, oh no, it has to be East versus West. I mean, it would kind of suck because that's how the NBA has been, you know, forever, but I'm fine with adjusting if that's what it's going to take for me to get, you know, better playoffs, or if the interest of fairness, or if people think that it's going to be better. I mean, I don't mind the way it is right now. I mean, that doesn't bother me too much, but if there's a big groundswell about the 1 through 16, I'm fine with that too. I don't think I really hate it.
Yeah, I'm not really mad about it, but I think it could be better. I think it potentially would be better. The only negative about it, of course, is you kind of increase travel during the early rounds of the playoffs, but I think that to the cost of that versus getting a better finals, I think would probably be worth the trade-off for me. But yeah, that's a fun idea. We'll see. And they've been kind of a little more open-minded on stuff lately, so we'll see, you know, whether they consider that one. Moving on to finals MVP. Of course, there's kind of a big debate over, you know, KD and Steph, who should have won the finals MVP. I thought it was pretty clearly Durant, mostly, I think, because of, you know, he had such an exceptional Game 3, which was kind of the, you know, the one that really sealed the series, where Steph just really struggled during that game. Steph had a very good Game 4, and, you know, overall their numbers were fairly close, although Durant's, I think, were pretty much better across the board. I think there was some sentimental swell for Steph because, of course, you know, he has been the, you know, the most important player over the entire 4-year run, and, you know, didn't win the first two finals MVPs, so there was some, you know, some maybe the idea that it validated him a little bit more. But I don't know, do you think it matters at all to his legacy that he hasn't won a finals MVP? I mean, let's assume he doesn't win one for whatever reason. Does that really make a big difference?
Yeah, I don't think so. And it's actually interesting. I went, there was a Hoops Hype article about this, like best players to never win a finals MVP or whatever. And obviously there's some caveats there of like people that, you know, didn't win because they maybe were not in enough or when they made it to the finals or whatever. But these guys, I think there was a pretty fun name. And there's a few names that definitely stuck out to me. Jason Kidd was one of them. That one's like, that's fine. I mean, I didn't really expect Jason Kidd to win many finals MVPs. Clyde Clyde Drexler again. That's another one. Oscar Robertson, David Robinson, Julius Erving, Kevin Garnett, Kevin McHale, and Scottie Pippen. So nobody. Julius Erving is the one that obviously sticks out as like an all-time great, definitely all-timer that doesn't have it, despite being in a few. I mean, not a bunch, but you know, enough where you would maybe assume that he could get one out of there. David Robinson, I guess, is one, but you know, by the time he really started to make the finals, you know, Duncan was kind of the dominant player of his team. Oscar Robertson obviously is one, and Kevin Garnett, but you know, by the time he got to there, it was because of the Celtics and that sort of stuff. So that doesn't bother me. I mean, I don't think any of those really bother me anymore than any. I mean, I still think you can be an all-time great without being the Finals MVP, particularly because to me, I don't know. Finals MVP is I don't know. I just don't care about it all that much. So that's why, like, people are arguing, oh, should Steph have won it or Durant have won it? I don't really care. Like, we'll use it as we kind of talk about a guy. But I don't know that if it's player X and player Y and one has a Finals MVP and one doesn't, that I'm going to decide that one. I mean, Andre Iguodala is a Finals MVP, and it's like, all right. I mean, he was very good in that series, but like, you know, I don't know. It doesn't bother me all that much, and I don't really care all that much about it. So if he ends up with none of them, I don't think it really matters. I think his numbers will speak for themselves, and his numbers are obviously still great in the finals. So I think that's all that's all I'm going to look at when it's all said and done.
Sure. Yeah. Worth noting that Erving did win the two ABA playoff MVPs, and he didn't win an NBA one. So he's a little bit of an asterisk.
And Bill Russell, he never even won a Finals MVP, that lazy bum. I mean, they didn't have the award until 1969, and the award is now named after him. But still, you'd think you'd get one in there, right?
Right, you think so, yeah. Well, darn Jerry West, I guess.
I think Babe Ruth has, like, one MVP because they only came out with MVP, like, later. And then, like, there was some weird thing where you couldn't give it to the same guy or something like that. So it's like, Babe Ruth only has one MVP. Weird. Like, well,
So... we'll close this out, and we've maybe touched on this a little bit, but just circling back, do you think there's anything to the idea that the Warriors are or could eventually be bad for the league?
No, I don't think so. I think there's always these teams, and that's the thing that we've sort of fought against, and it's kind of fun because there is sort of your casual fans that are kind of roll their eyes and do whatever, but then there's always... kind of the hardcore NBA fans, the people that know about their history. You know, there was a Sports Illustrated cover that was making the rounds a few days ago, which was, Jordan, with the rest of the league trying to lead. Jordan's like this big caricature that's eight times bigger than all the other players or whatever, and everybody else is jumping and leaping. I forget, what was the actual headline? Can anybody beat the Bulls, or can anybody stop the Bulls or whatever? I think that's what it was, right? Headliner.
Are the Bulls too good?
Something like that.
Sean Heiken shared that one.
Yeah, essentially the same argument we're having right now, and I'm sure the same argument we've had, and we've looked through history as well and found many of those. So to me, no, they aren't. I think they're, I don't know, I guess you could say there'd be a time where they would be bad. I guess if they like acquired Anthony Davis for some fucking reason, that would be like, oh shit, all right, that's not bad. But still, I always truly believe that there's always going to be that other team. I mean, this year, and I mentioned this because I had a bunch of friends I was watching one of the finals games with, and they were just bitching and moaning about, the Warriors. And I said, you realize they were a Chris Paul injury away and like two miraculous comebacks from just getting ousted in the Western Conference Finals. Like, people forget a few the finals a few years ago, the famous Durant one, the Western Conference Finals. They were an Oklahoma City Thunder meltdown, 300 Oklahoma City Thunder meltdowns away from getting knocked out in the Western Conference Finals a few years ago as well. So, again, it's very fleeting. We sort of assume that it's like, oh, this team can't be beaten or whatever. And, like, 2 weeks ago, the Warriors were on the ropes and, like, we're almost going to get beaten. So it's one of those things that there's always going to be teams no matter what. The NBA was done when Miami got together with the Big Three, and then Dallas came and beat them, and then Spurs eventually came and beat them. And we saw this now with the Warriors. They can't be beat. I mean, they obviously one time got beat in the finals, and numerous times the Western Conference Finals almost got taken to the limit too, and yeah, like I said, I watched that NBA and NBC thing, and the Lakers cannot be beaten. Oh my god, this Kobe Shaq thing, and then 2 years later they're imploding. So it's just like it's very fleeting, and there's little things that can sort of happen. So no, I don't know that it's ever going to get bad, because I think, and we can look at the patterns as well, the NBA thrives when there's those dominant teams, you know what I mean? There's always, we can look at the groundswell when Miami got together. It really rejiggered the league a lot, and people started to get into it, whether it's to hate that team or not, whatever, but you're going to sort of rally behind another team. And we're seeing it now, I think, a little bit as well. It's fun to have a dominant team and see other people sort of try to go at them. And you know, my last point on that is, you know, this last offseason, we sort of all assumed, because the Warriors went through and blitzed through the playoffs the prior year, remember they went 16-1 or whatever, that we assumed that every team was just going to go, oh, well, forget it. Like, the Warriors are going to dominate, and we're not even going to bother. And then every NBA GM just went fucking nuts and started, like, acquiring as many people as possible. And you have OKC trying their thing. You have Houston trying their thing. You have teams all trying to do that. So I think we assume that teams are just going to give up and go, oh, what's the bother? But that's not in the nature of NBA teams. It's not in the nature of NBA players. And it's not the nature of GMs as well. They're always going to go and try to be the team that tops topples the dynasty or whatever. And that to me is always fun, and that's healthy for the NBA.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's worth noting, you know, Mark Stein shared his newsletter that ABC's viewership for these finals was up 90% compared to the last sweep in the finals, of course, the Cavs and the Spurs in 2007. So, you know, you think of how far that was under 10 million, and there's it's up to the previous three finals were up to about 20 million in viewership, which was the biggest since 98 when, you know, Jordan retired. That was almost 30 million. So, you know, and the there was kind of a dip in the you know, the Lakers dynasty kind of boosted things up a little bit throughout, you know, 2000 to 2004, the years the Spurs were, and it was definitely down. And then it's kind of steadily been, you know, been rising since the Heat years. It upticked, and then, you know, since, of course, the Cavs and Warriors have brought it up even more. So, yeah, I mean, you could maybe see that is – if there's this idea of their dominance lasting so long that to turn off the fans, I think that's unlikely. The more likely thing is that, yeah, could there be a post-Warriors, post-LeBron lull, you know, once they fade, like, after Jordan retired in 98? I mean, yeah, I guess, but, like, I mean, yeah, of course, if your biggest star, your biggest, you know, star attraction team, you know, leaves, obviously there's going to be an effect on that. I don't think there's any way necessarily to avoid that other than not having huge stars, which, of course, is
not yeah, I would take the other strategy. I like the strategy of having stars, yeah.
Right. I would think that would be something that you would want to do. So, I don't sense that, you know, I kind of feel like that there's not going to be necessarily a point where it's going to turn so many people off that they're, you know, really going to be hurting in their, you know, TV ratings or what
and,
have you.
So and I think the league in general does a better job of marketing, too. And we talked about this in our 20 years later NBA episode, that there was this reckoning that everybody knew was going to happen. There was talk about it in 1996 that when these dudes retire, who are next in the line? Who are these next guys that are going to step up? And a lot of those guys, for whatever reasons, had transgressions. They didn't quite fit. You know, there was guys like a Chris Webber type that, like, they didn't do anything maybe wrong, but they weren't ready to become those next superstars. It was Allen Iverson, who obviously looked at, you know, and people had a certain thought about him or whatever. I think there was we read quotes in the Sports Illustrated in 1996 where people were like, well, when Ewing and Jordan and Barkley and all these guys retire, who are these next guys that are going to take over, and are these guys ready to take over? And we knew, and there were questions at the time that they weren't ready to take over. I don't know who those next guys are for the NBA, but I think that they are doing a much better job of marketing themselves and marketing more than just a few guys right now. I mean, there are numerous guys that the NBA markets to the fullest. So if it's a Joel Embiid type that becomes the guy, if it's a Ben, you know, I don't know who the next guy is. We don't know who that is, but, like, I think they do such a good job of marketing their younger players now, whereas that time they didn't. And it could have just been a circumstance, too, in the 90s where, like we said, there's nobody was really ready to take that mantle, and there was so many different issues with those guys that were coming up that there was nobody ready to kind of take it over. There was – Kobe was kind of weird, you know what I mean? Like, nobody really wanted Kobe to be the face of the NBA for a multitude of reasons. Allen Iverson became the face, but that became a problem for some people. So it's really interesting. But, like, yeah, we knew that at the time. Like, we are reading articles that people are saying that. I don't know that anybody's saying that now. You know, maybe they will in a few years, but I think the NBA does such a better job of marketing now that I don't think that's going to be an issue.
Yeah, there was a lot going on culturally in 98 that beyond Jordan retirement, which was obviously the biggest factor. There was a lot going on that I think led to the inevitable downturn. I mean, it had been basically, you know, boom for 20 years or 15 years or what have you, that there it inevitably was going to be going down, where I think this seems like, you know, yeah, there'll be a dip, obviously, once LeBron is gone and once the Warriors are done. Obviously, that this is a big upswing, but I think they're better prepared to handle it. You know, we'll see, obviously, how things go. But yeah, some interesting history going on, of course, with these finals. I think it's brought up a lot of fun things to talk about. I'm glad we got to do this.
Yeah, this is really fun. Our season's just beginning now, and, you know, not really, but sort of. I mean, we got some good stuff planned for the summer, though. So we always do it big in the summer. That's our time to kind of shine on the on the podcast world. Everybody else kind of takes a break or talks about free agency, and we delve into some stuff. So it'll be pretty fun to see what we're doing here in a little bit. But we had some good stuff planned for you.
Yeah, we're going to try to dive it probably mid July or so. We'll really ramp up with that. So hopefully everyone will enjoy it. We'll give an official announcement about it later. We've alluded to it on social media, but we'll let it. We'll announce it formally in the future. But anyway, So thanks, everyone, for checking us out. You can find us at the Step Back at fansided.com. You can find us on Twitter and Facebook at Over and Back NBA, and you can also find us on iTunes, Stitcher, or pretty much anywhere you listen to podcasts. If you want to give us a rating and review, that would be greatly appreciated. So thanks for listening. We're back again soon.